Hey, San Bernardino, how are you guys?
Hey, welcome back to Real Talk San Bernardino.
Yay, the day after the elections.
Right, so we're having this special post-election podcast to give everyone updates and talk about some of the things that happened last night. And we have a special guest today, too. And so, yeah, clap for her. We have Rocio Aguayo, who just finished a primary campaign with Senate District 23 candidate Abigail Medina, who ended up being the top vote getter in that race and the work she did on that. So she'll talk a little bit about that on other San Bernardino politics as well. She was the field director and campaign manager, so she was really doing a lot for that campaign. So we definitely want to hear from her.
Yes.
So Treasure, what happened in the wards? Tell us that.
So a lot happened. In the third ward, Juan Figueroa took it with 70%-ish over Luis Ojeda. In the fifth ward, Henry Nickel is now in a runoff with Ben Reynoso. Neither one received 50% plus. Mm-hmm. Kim Calvin and Bacine are head-to-head right now. At one point, they were 3 apart, 2 apart. Now they're 22 apart, but with at least 1,300 votes to still be counted regionally, so we don't know how many will apply to that race. Mm-hmm. And Jim Moldahill and Damon Alexander are now in a runoff in November for the 7th ward.
So let's explain a little bit to people that are listening about what it means to win with 50 plus 1 and what it means to be eligible for a runoff.
Okay. So if you are in a head-to-head race or if you take the majority, anything over 50 plus 1, which is 50% plus 1 vote, you win the election outright. You don't have to go to a runoff. If the candidates have received less than 50%, like you saw Jim and Damon receive like 22% apiece, then they have to go to November, and that's a winner take all because they'll be head to head as well. So it's a little bit different how we have it set up in San Bernardino. Some at this point are saying we should just do everything in November. This is kind of crazy, and just do a winner take all no matter what.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that would probably be a better way to do it. As it stands, even the people who win with 50 plus 1 get sworn in at the end of the November election certification anyway, which right. I think is crazy.
And I think there's a disadvantage as well. You know, you're in a race where you have 5 people as opposed to the one-on-one. You have a longer time to campaign because it's rarely, unless you're in like the big seated events, like in the county seats, are you going to hit that 50 plus 1? So you're getting an extra 5-6 months of campaign time.
Right. So the 2 campaigns that will continue are the 5th ward and the 7th ward. And actually, Rocio knows a little bit about the 5th ward candidate because they were working also in conjunction with the Abigail Medina campaign. So that would be Ben Reynoso and Henry Nickel.
Yes.
So what do you think about that?
Go Ben. and you know what? I stayed out. I really wanted to be a conscientious objector as far as the 5th ward was concerned. And I hope people understand, and I'm going to speak slowly, that just because these are not your wards does not mean you cannot go out and support the candidate. I think it's so important people do not be defeated. Juan is the only one right now who has won. Mm-hmm. Kim can definitely take Bacine's seat, and we are still in the runoff. Mm-hmm. Like, San Bernardino has this opportunity to adjust and realize none of these people that are in right now function without John. So Juan is a nobody without John. Bacine is a nobody without John. They've just, the strings get pulled. So San Bernardino mm-hmm. still has an opportunity.
Yeah, and specifically with the 5th ward with Henry and Ben, that's going to be a really important race because we don't know for sure about Damon, but we know for sure that Ben will not be Team John.
Right.
And so to break up the quorum of votes that John has right now, that's going to be a very critical race. And so, Rocio, you know Ben personally. You guys have worked with him. What do you think about Ben and what he would bring to the 5th ward?
I think Ben really just provides an energy that is needed for the city council. I think people just aren't interested with the current council because of they're just not very open with, like, they're not approachable people. And I think Ben is more of an approachable person. Mm-hmm. And he's more willing to just have conversations with everybody, regardless of political party affiliations. He wants everyone to unite, and I think the current council members are more divisive than uniting people. And I think he's just overall just a more like, he seems more human than Henry Nicol, and I think people like that.
Yeah.
And so,
well, he's very well qualified. His credentials are stellar. I mean, he's got a really great education from Loyola Marymount, in English, I believe, language and literature. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and I find him to be very approachable as well. I found him to be very nice. I don't know a lot about him. That's why I wanted your perspective. But I definitely think that the Fifth Ward could use someone like him. He seems to be someone that will analyze the situation and then come up with what is best for the ward and for the city. And that's what we need. Because mm-hmm. right now we only have people that do what's best for John.
That's right. We have a very self, that's so it right there. Nothing is moving forward in our city because everybody's beholden to John's agenda. Mm-hmm. What I like about Ben, and I've watched his videos, is that I love the youthfulness. Like, there is something about San Bernardino that we need to kind of get away from this old guard, where you have these lifetime residents who believe that their location makes them qualified. Like, I've lived here my whole life. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but the city's fallen apart. We are the worst economy in the region. What does being here your whole life accomplish for residents? And that's absolutely nothing. And it doesn't take but maybe 20 minutes of driving through San Bernardino to realize something's wrong.
Yeah.
And Ben will listen. That's the thing. Nobody's listening. Nobody's asking questions on that dais. Mm-hmm. And I think, and Ben is really big on the airport, which, as we all know, we're being, you know, they're being sued over now. The state has stepped in because that whole thing was so damn shady because of John and Teddy and
Don Rao.
And Don Rao and Oda Jetty.
And Jesse Armendariz.
Yeah, they pushed this forward so they didn't have to disclose details to the residents, and that caught up with them. And I don't think that would happen with Ben, with Kim, with Jim. They took Fred off this and put Teddy there specifically for these types of things. So I think we mm-hmm. need totally different blood.
So let's talk about Damon Alexander in the 7th Ward.
Okay.
He ran before. I don't know too much about him, but I'm worried because even though he's not a John person per se, he seems like someone who would be following someone's agenda instead of creating his own. And also he was supported by Wendy McCamick, which is very troubling.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What are your thoughts?
I worry. I know that he has ties to Basine, and that is something. But I think beyond I know a lot of people know each other. In speaking to Dame, well, being at the 7th Ward candidate forum mm-hmm. and hearing him talk about the issues, he's nowhere close, as far as I'm concerned, with the qualification on the conversation. Jim surpasses him hands down in the general understanding of how government works and how it's supposed to function. And Damon's the nicest, but you got to know what you're talking about. With him, it's a very surface level understanding.
We did talk to him the day that the last press conference that was held by the attorneys and the women that are mm-hmm. suing the city and John, and he did have something to say. We videotaped him, mm-hmm. so we can probably post that when we post the podcast, but if you want to just remind everybody what he said.
He believes that John should step aside right now during the investigation, let Teddy assume as mayor pro tem, and then when all of the investigation comes out, should the findings be 100%, that John should resign. And I respect Damon a lot for that. That shows that he's not allegiant. And I've told the other candidates, it's something to say it during an election. It's another thing to demand it when you're actually elected. And that's Jim, Fred, Sandra, Teddy, Basine, Juan. It's all cute to get down and say resign, but will you make the effort that you can as an elected official? So, and Mike Avendaris, yeah, he had said the same thing, but he didn't make it through.
Yeah. So it was a crazy night. Like you said, there's still a lot of ballots out there to be counted. Some of these decisions still have yet to be really, solidified, mm-hmm. we're still hoping that Kim will be able to pick up the votes that she needs to assume the seat in the 6th ward. So we're hoping for that. But as far as the city elections go, I think you're right. I think we do need to move just to a November election, winner-take-all type of deal, because this is crazy. Like, even if they had one with 50+1, they wouldn't even assume the position until December. And a lot can happen with the people who are still there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how they like to just, like, call these special meetings and do all the stuff that they're going to do. Mm-hmm. So that's problematic to me. But now let's get to the juiciest and the bestest race of the night.
This was fun. I was very excited about it.
Which is like, we're so excited about it, and we're like so proud of the work that this young lady has done. Amazing job. How did you go from hearing all the negative, oh, Abigail can't, you know, she's an, what do you call her, unelectable, you know, all these naysayers. But she did it. You guys did it. So tell us, what was that like?
So I was brought onto the team in December, and right from the beginning when Abigail spoke to me, like, I knew straight up she was the only person on that whole slate who was going to be the most electable, because she had the name recognition. Sacramento had already spent $2 million on her in 2016, and I knew she was going to be the most determined and dedicated person to actually follow through to do all the things that needed to be done in order to have any kind of chance. Mm-hmm. What was the rest of the quick part?
Yeah. So it's true that there are a lot of things that need to happen when you're running, and some candidates do the work and some don't. But I will tell you that Abigail, and when I sat down with her for an endorsement meeting, I thought the same thing. She showed me the numbers, and I'm like, this is impressive. I mean, yeah, she could do this. And I knew that her work ethic was there, and that she was going to do, she wanted it, right?
She showed up. I want to say, I have to say this, because I was going back and forth between her and Chris Goodfellow in the beginning. You know, I knew of Abigail, didn't really know her, but the airport authority, the city council incidents, she was at, I saw her Eloise's function, they were talking about homelessness and youth poverty. She showed up, and that to me was the deciding factor, because I never met Chris Goodfellow. I never saw Chris Goodfellow. She stayed in her area, and Abigail made the effort, and she spoke up and spoke out. And I thought, if you'll do that here and take a chance while you're an elected official in very, you know, hostile conversation topics, mm-hmm. imagine what you'll do.
She has been very unapologetic about the issues that she really cares about, including the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And she did go to the meeting and speak out against the Westgate, or is it Eastgate?
Eastgate
Project. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I always ask, like, people who are running for office, do you want to win? Because if you don't want to win, then don't run.
No.
Because it's a lot of work. And especially for, this is a huge seat.
Mm-hmm.
The district is, I mean, tell us, Rocio, the district, how widespread it is and where it spans from.
Yeah, so it goes all the way up to Phelan, down all of San Bernardino County on the right side of the 215, and like above Baseline, all the way down to Riverside County, Hemet, Menifee, that whole area down there. It's mm-hmm. just a huge, huge district.
Yeah, it's very big. Wow. How many voters in that district?
The top of my head.
But you guys did so much outreach and knocked on so many doors and talked to so many people. Now, I was shocked to find that she did this with under $100,000.
Wow.
And that tells me that the whole fallacy about you have to have millions of dollars to run is bullshit. You just have to want it. And you have to have a good team behind you, the support, the structure, the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what wins it. And just being out there, just doing the work, just knocking on the doors. They knocked on so many doors.
Mm-hmm. So, and I want to give her a big kudo for staying on point. Mm. Even throughout that whole, just, I thought, horribly disrespectful return from Chris Goodfellow, that Abigail just rose above it. She kept her eye on being a candidate and on the topics and on the people. Mm-hmm. And it would have been so easy, you know, because we're women. And then for us, I think when you attack our families and you talk about, I mean, I'm sure people, you guys have children, but when you talk about someone's kids and you do that, when you've never talked about that other candidate, she rose, I was like, whew.
Yeah. That's true. There was the whole thing that came up that was very unfortunate. And I personally believe, you know, really hurt Chris.
I was going to ask you that. Do you think that's reflected in her numbers?
Not so much. I think she just, this was her first time running an office. And I think that, like, I don't really understand what the Democratic Party was thinking, because nobody knew her. She only really had a base in Redlands. And Abigail had the previous school board election, whole area, 80-40, so she had the name recognition. So I don't know if, I believe that the questionnaire had too much of an impact. I do know that she just didn't have a good team. She mm-hmm. just didn't have the qualifications.
And she didn't have Rocio. Didn't do the work. But yeah, I think that's true. And I had heard that she really wasn't, you know, working it. I'll say Abigail was definitely the hardest working candidate this season. And really, whenever she runs, she always is.
Yeah. And now her challenger now in the head-to-head race.
Oh.
What? Tell us more about her.
Well, I mean, Chris said it in the questionnaire. Well, that's going to be a fight because she's a Latina and she's also a school board member. So it's going to be, you know, educational policies. You know, a lot of different things there. We're just going to focus on doing what we do best, and it's engaging with the voters directly and making sure that we're building community and just big bases of people who know that they're being listened to and that they have an outlet for someone to not only listen to them, but like to take what they're saying and do something about it in terms of policy and government. Because people just do not believe in government, and that's what we offer as Team Abigail, is people feel that they have an opportunity to have their voice heard. We knocked on doors, and a lot of those people were not planning on voting, but just because we knocked on their door mm-hmm. or we called them, they turned out to vote. Mm-hmm. And that's what they need. They need someone who's going to engage with them and bring them to the table, because they're not being brought to the table. And that's what we did. That's why we did the highest and the best in this election, because we just knocked on the most doors, we spoke to the most people, we did what we knew best, which is community organizing at the grassroots level.
Absolutely. So what would you say, after having been and spent some time in the Southern Riverside section, which is not that far from us, but it was a completely different animal, what would you say are the issues that are most prevalent there, that people care most about there? Out there.
You're saying
in the Hemet, San Jacinto, Menifee, all these areas out there.
They're also really concerned about environmental issues, is what seemed like. And
you know, I have noticed that from Hemet beyond, there's like a lot of solar. There's a lot of solar energy that has really expanded in that area. It hasn't so much here.
Yeah.
But I have noticed that before.
And then, well, our platform was really just the environmental piece, affordable housing and education. And I think that really just, again, resonated with everyone in the district who came out to support her, because everyone in California, like, that's what they care about most, because it's one of the, or those three are the biggest issues in the state right now. And it's just what we all have in common with California.
Yeah. And those are a lot of communities are the, you know, ticky-tack house communities with the families that have moved there specifically so that their children can have a little bit of a better education than, you know, than they have where they had here. I have a relative who just moved to Cali Mesa specifically for schools for her kids. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely a huge issue and something that she's very, very well versed on and knows a lot about. We don't know too much about the opponent, other than, of course, she's a Republican. She's a member of a very wealthy Yucaipa family, big, big Mormon family out in Yucaipa, former mayor, her husband. She herself is an immigrant. So yeah, there's like, you know, like was pointed out, there are some similarities. But it's gonna be what you guys have already been doing. It's gonna be who is reaching people, whose message is getting, you know,
it's about the
into topics. The people's hands.
Yeah, and I think you look at these, you know, new, we call them new chance communities, that, you know, Hemet and Menifee, they're all still in that development stage to become the suburb of the desert of Riverside. But I just see, like, there were so many negative campaigns this time around. I guess that's the way it always is. But just watching someone stay on topic, stay to the issues, I think wins people over. Like, it's not going to behoove anybody to go negative. People don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah. I just want to add, like, we just had such a good time because our campaign was focused on youth, college students, high school students, and then introducing them to different generations of leaders in the community. And we just always had a good time, and we had quality food, healthy food every time we were phone banking and cabin scene. And we always made sure to be plastic free because we are very conscious about, you know, not
consuming practicing more. What you preach.
Yeah, exactly. So that was just something very important for us to continue within our campaign. And I think it just really, people really liked that, and they stuck around and they came back multiple times to help out and talk to other people. And they just really liked learning about government and the way it works, and that they had an opportunity to have a voice at the table. Mm-hmm. Even though they didn't live in the district, they can impact other people and also engage the people that they do know that live in the district and make sure that they are informed. Because a lot of people at the end of the day, like, they didn't know an election was happening. They didn't know who was on the ballot. They don't know what's going on because no one's talking to them. And that's, at the end of the day, like, what it takes to win an election.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, now you have till November campaigning. How do we volunteer? Who do we call? What do we do? How do we email?
How do we get some of Alicia's delicious food? Because I heard about it. That is the thing, that there was a really good vibe going. And Abigail herself did tell me last night, she's like, I didn't get any signs. When I had money, I would hire people and, you know, and treat them well. And that's why they come back. You know, and also because they see you, they see what you're doing, and it's inspiring. It just is.
Okay, I want to say something, and first. Okay, so tell people where you can volunteer.
Yes.
Website, email.
So our website is abigailforsenate.com, and that is Abigail, F-O-R, not the number 4, senate.com. And our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is also Abigail for Senate. We are very responsive. We constantly have people messaging us, so if you want to get involved, please message us. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that our campaign, I think, was very good at. We rebranded and we really focused on providing information and just doing a lot of social media presence so that people know what we were doing and that they had an opportunity to be engaged with us as well.
Cool. The one thing I want to bring up, because I know Abigail was union, she was supported by the union. But there was a question they asked candidates this year, which was, do you believe that staffers should be able to unionize and help on campaigns? And my answer was no, because grassroots candidates don't get the money that the non-union supporting candidates get. Mm-hmm. And I think hearing Abigail, when she had money, she could buy and she would pay. And I think that's something that people who do support candidates that are pro-union or supportive need to understand, that it's hard supporting everybody and it's very easy to get large donors with special interest. Mm-hmm. And it's a big thing to be that grassroots candidate that struggles because you want to have integrity in your campaign and in the kind of contributions you're allowing. So I think that just speaks to something that people need to take into consideration about what it takes a lot to fight for everybody, and it spreads you really thin. Mm-hmm. So yay for Abigail.
Yeah, she did pay a living wage. So that's, I mean, you're right. I mean, you can't, there's not a lot of money coming in because she doesn't take money from corporate banks like, you know, other people did, etc. So it's very limited. But I think that moving forward, the campaign is going to, like, really really do a lot of things in South Riverside County and make it happen. I'm really hopeful that she can, you know, flip that district and make it blue. So tell us a little bit, though, how did you get started in all of this?
With Abigail or my whole
life? Your own personal, how did you become this, like, rock star field director / campaign manager?
So I was introduced to community organizing through my brother, Ivan Aguayo, and I really got my foot in the door when I was 15 with ICUC, Inland Congregations United for Change. Mm-hmm. And there I was organizing at the high school. I went to Arroyo Valley High School, and we were just learning about educational policy. We started a club, Students for Change, and we would meet with teachers, principals. We would host forums about recommendations with school board members about policy and the administration. So that was a lot of fun. That really taught me a lot about, like, mm-hmm. educational politics and policy. But I kind of got, my senior year, I got distracted and I wanted to do something else. I was like, this isn't for me right now. And I started doing stuff with Planned Parenthood and the California Family Health Council. So I started learning about reproductive health and justice, because that's not something I grew up learning. My parents are Latinos and they didn't really talk to me about that. So I was informed about reproductive health and building healthy relationships. After that, I just went to Valley College, just got involved with their student government, was the student organizations director, president.
Only amazing. Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I was involved with San Bernardino Generation Now as a board member. Same thing with ICUC. I was a board member there for those 4 years. And I just did a lot of voter registration drives with ICUC since I was a senior in high school. And I just took on a little projects here and there with, like, different organizations and groups after that. And hadn't really, like, been too involved with campaigns. I was involved with Abigail in 2013 when she ran for school board, and then briefly in 2016 for the assembly. But I did volunteer with Gigi Hanna. I don't know if y'all remember, she got elected by a few votes.
Yep.
So I helped her with
literally
that.
Literally, like, one vote, right? Two votes, something crazy like that.
So, yeah, those are interesting experiences that I think really, like, prepared me today for understanding how to utilize my experience in community organizing in a political realm. But at the end of the day, like, my emphasis is youth organizing, and that is, I think, what really just helped this campaign turn mm-hmm. around, because everyone thought, oh, it was the end of the game for her, but no, we turned it around mm-hmm. thanks to the youth organizing.
Mm-hmm. So that's great, because you were able to take something that you really love doing, which is organizing youth, and helping a great candidate. And it all just worked out awesome.
I have a new project for you.
Oh.
Yes. While you're talking about youth organizing, me and another, I don't want to name her right now, but have been talking about a youth council for the city of San Bernardino to work in conjunction with the general plan. Mm-hmm. We don't think that enough of the 16 to 18 year olds who are about ready to become the leaders are at all being involved in what the next 20 to 25 years will look like. A lot of people planning won't be here in 20 to 25 years. So
that's something that I know that has been talked about a lot. Like, you've mentioned that you were with the other organization, San Bernardino Generation Now. It's something that's been, people have been wanting, mm-hmm. but of course the council doesn't listen. So
I think absolutely. We could do it. I think if we put it together as a community and those kids show up regardless, plus be given training sessions to show them how to become elected officials, like Catalina's List puts on, how to be that next generation, a conglomeration would just shift the city of San Bernardino, because the average age is less than 34. So, okay, just gonna put that out there.
Good things to look forward to.
Yes.
So, okay, everybody. So this was our big special on San Bernardino city politics. Again, there is going to be a couple of runoffs. You need to be involved. These candidates cannot get elected by themselves. They need help knocking on doors. They need help getting their message out. So if you have time to volunteer for candidates, please do that. Check with us first, though, on which candidate you're going to be supporting with.
And you know, the thing is, at this point with the runoffs, be aware of what's happening. This thing with John is not over. It's far from over with Matt Brown coming forward, with Allie Payne's testimony, with Don Smith and Myrna and Karen. Like, and you guys just realize San Bernardino is in flux right now. Like, there's a transition about to happen, and we're still going strong till November. And mm-hmm. I just don't want people giving up. People are like, oh God, nothing changed.
Yeah.
There's still more elections.
And one really quick point that I also want to make about how a Senate race affects our politics locally. Currently, because Senate District 23 is my district, mm-hmm. and we were represented by Mike Morrell, so basically we were not represented for many, many years. But as you can see, with James Ramos and Eloise, when they got elected, they started bringing money.
Yes.
They started bringing funding. I still don't know what happened to the $3 million for the
general plan.
But he brought it nonetheless. Right. And so this is why it's important to support leadership in Sacramento that will think of us and bring us resources, mm-hmm. instead of just sitting there and doing nothing. So it's super important. The Senate race is super important for the city of San Bernardino, because Abigail will be an ally and a champion for the things that we need here locally.
And she said it too last night. I asked her, I was like, you know, one of the things is that you're going to work in conjunction. And she was like, absolutely. That's what we need to do, is keep bringing resources. Mm-hmm. I believe she was endorsed by Eloise, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes. So, I mean, this is huge. I Connie Leyva, Eloise, James, they all say the same thing, that for so many years, even the electeds were disenfranchised and how
not work together.
They didn't. So now we're right at the point where, at least at the top down, they're paying attention to us. Although our council is failing us, we do have other elected officials, and we can't just be myopic in how we're going to plan our future. It's got to be a broadened thing, and Pete Aguilar won, so I think we're building that chain.
I hope so. And so, everybody, thank you so much for listening. I want to really thank Rocio for taking time out of probably the first day off that she's had in months. And, you know, for joining us and explaining, you know, some of the stuff that went on in the campaign and how they're going to move forward. So thank you so much for that.
You're amazing. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
And so, there's more to come, because there's plenty going on. Treasurer's going to be at the council meeting tonight, probably going to give it to the mayor again. I can't believe his smug ass is even going to show up, how shameless he is. I just want to mention also the other thing, the protesters that were there the other day, I said that everybody was getting paid, but I lied. For full transparency, his mom and his sister were at the front with their signs, and they did not get paid. Mm. They just did it because they support sexual harassment of women. Okay, I said it.
Okay, thanks, San Bernardino.
All right, bye, San Bernardino. See you next time. Bye.